It's that time of the week where we speak to the former Leeds United chairman, Ken Bates, and he joins me on the line now. How are you, KB?
Well, thank you, Tim. Sunshine. Good and happy here.
Very good. A little bit gloomy here in Leeds at the moment, but plenty of optimism.
I think Bunny Car is going to be a bit gloomy soon because I've got 20 new members of the Bates family arriving for a long weekend. I think Monica might wonder what hit them.
Yeah, maybe.
In fact, all my friends in the restaurants we're going to, I've advised them to take the weekend off.
A Bates takeover over in Monaco. Here in Leeds, we have a bit of optimism ahead of the new season now. But one thing this week that has hit the headlines is that the club decided to put up walk-up on-the-day prices for tickets. So that's after selling record championship season ticket numbers, up to £39, £49 in some cases, to watch a game at Elland Road next season if you are a walk-up. What do you make of that increase?
Well, I mean, the cost of living is going up, and so is inflation, so you have to expect it, don't you? In fact, I was reading some old notes, the interviews and that, and press cuttings this week, tidying up things. And I said, remember saying to them, you can put up taxes, you can put up fuel prices, put up cigarette prices, put up being, that. But you remember, you put the price of admission price up to a football ground, all hell breaks loose and people shout and start bawling about it. But if you want a good football club, you've got to pay for it. It's as simple as that. Unless you have your own by the club's owned by a very rich foreigner who doesn't see it as a business but sees it as a plaything or a symbol of a prestige symbol. But the fact of the matter is, football is like any other business, and it has to make sure the income exceeds its costs. Because if you don't, well, sooner or later, the inevitable happens, you go bust. But the other important thing, you have to keep these things simple. I remember when I first came to football, it was so complicated. For example, at Leeds, when I first came, those can remember, the family enclosure seats, family enclosure in the centre of the East End, which were the best seats, and the so-called prestige seats were on the wings. It's quite silly. So I reversed those. And then I think in the Cop, you had a central price and a wing price. All that happened, of course, is that people used to buy a cheap ticket and then go walk across to the central seats. So it's made them all the seats the same price. And they said, well, the people who buy their tickets first get the best seats. Problem solved. And you don't need as many stewards as supervisors. Obviously, fiddle. Kiss. Keep it simple, steward. Keep it simple, stupid. And you don't, as I say, you don't need as many stewards. And the thing is, the joke about it is, football has always been rife for people who like to take advantage of the rules. The more complicated they are, well, the more loopholes there are. You show student tickets. Well, student tickets. Who knows if the students bought the tickets? If they bought the tickets, you know, they didn't then sell them on. In fact, we used to know that some tickets used to be sold in the pubs on a Friday night for a game. So we had to stop those. But the biggest one of all was the blue badge. You know, the old disabled blue badge parking thing that all the local councils introduced throughout the country. And Leeds were particular about it. And I remember seeing one or two examples. So I knew that the people using blue badge disabled tickets weren't disabled. Of course, the rule at Leeds used to be that you had a blue badge, well, you bought your ticket, then you had needed a helper. That was the assumption. So you get the next ticket free. And I checked up and we had 330 odd blue badges, which meant that 300 tickets were being given away. But it also turned out that they weren't being monitored properly by the club assumed that the council were monitoring the blue badge, but some of them were being issued over the phone. the show, I remember saying this particular time, Katie Holmes, the ticket office manager, Katie, we're going to make everyone come up for an inspection when they want to renew their blue badge. And she's saying to me, Chairman, I don't think I can do that. I'm not medically qualified. I said, no, we know you're not medically qualified, but let's just see who turns up. Make them turn up. They've got to come to the ground to renew their ticket so we can inspect them and see how disabled they are. Well, the joke about it is, I said, it's over 300. 100 odd didn't bother even to apply. You know, the other 200 odd, 100 turned out to be bona fide, and another 100 weren't. So we didn't allow them. And people will probably remember the tubby guy. He was called the yellow, he was nicknamed the Yellow Peril, because he used to wear a very vivid yellow shirt, and he's prancing about behind the goal. And the year we got promotion back to the Championship, after Beckford scored the winning goal about 10 minutes to go against Bristol Rovers, his son filmed him running up and down the touchline, jumping in the air and everything else. So, of course, he didn't get his renewal. And then Phil Hay did an article with him which said he would never come and support Leeds United again. He used to travel up from Derbyshire somewhere. Because he eventually went to jail for abusing his stepdaughter. But the point was, he got away with it. Nobody checked it. And clubs were always seen as fair game. The old joke about, you know, crawling under the gates or going. And again, at Leeds, we put all the fences up higher to stop people climbing over. Except one particular part, four people still got over. But they got over into the away section, so we decided to leave them there to their fate. Then they never did it again. It's quite interesting. It's like everything else. The more complicated you make things, then the more easy it is for loopholes when people take advantage. And it's not fair of the genuine fans who paid a full price. Another phrase used to be common at Leeds was mate's rate. So somebody said, you know, what about a discount mate's rate? And I just stopped all that. Because to start with, of course, these people can't help boasting about it. So the other guys who paid full price said, well, why should he get the ticket cheaper than mine? So he called it a bad feeling. And, of course, the biggest scam of all was the 100 Club. In the 1950s, the old West Ham burnt down, and 100 loyal fans put £1,000 up each to rebuild the stand. And in return, they had a club within the club. So when I turned up, I was invited to one of their lunches and dinners and blah, blah, blah. But the whole point about it was they were paying peanuts for their price, for the tickets. They had their own club within the club, had their own club room, had their own bar. They got the receipts out. In fact, they weren't spending enough money in the bar to pay the barman's wages. Anyway, I went along, one of the interviews that you do, and it turns out that none of them, some of them were sons of the original 100 people, and some of them were just friends or invitees. So it was just a cop-out. So I abandoned it, abolished it, which once something else stopped, made life easier. Simple thing with money, any business, make it simple and don't put any loopholes in. So the fact they put the prices up, well, you have to expect it. Every other price has gone up, hasn't it? Gas, electricity, water, well, football club pays for gas, electricity and water. And rates, and rent, but hopefully that would have stopped now that the new owner has purchased Pennon Road and Thorpe Arch, or is he just intending to do it? We don't know. But we'll soon know soon. That game will save money. But tension mounts, excitement rises. We're getting towards our first game. I think Oxford at home this Saturday. Be interesting. Give all the fans a chance, first chance, see all the new heroes have been signed. Of course, don't expect too much too soon, because they may take a bit of time to settle down and settle in, especially if they're foreigners who don't speak English very well. But give the new manager support, have patience, and who knows, this could be our year. Let's hope so.
It could indeed. Charlie Taylor is one player that fans won't be seeing on Saturday. Obviously now a Burnley player. This week, Leeds agreed a fee reported to be around £6 to £7 million to avoid a tribunal with Burnley. What do you make of the tribunals that have been brought in over the last few years for under 23 players who leave?
The tribunals have been in for a long time. The problem is that if you can do a deal directly with the club, that's much better, because some of the tribunals are poor. But it's a UEFA regulation to stop big clubs nicking players, young players. You know, you get a player at Key, you've had a kid from 12 or 13, and he runs out at the end of his contract, and he walks out. So a small club spend a lot of money, time and money and effort bringing the kid through, sees them stolen by the big club. And so the idea of the tribunals is, if you're under 25 at the end of the season, when your contract is ended, and you're on a free, you theoretically walk out on a free transfer, then compensation is paid to the club for all the work and effort they've put in through the kid's teenage years to get where he is, and that's fair. And some of the deals is appalling. I don't know if you remember, but a fellow called Bath used to run our academy, the Leeds Academy, and he went down to Chelsea and he took three players with him. And they're blatant interfering with players' contracts. Players understand this. And because they had them down there while they were still signed, and put them on them. Took them to the new training ground and put them out of the pitch, and silly fellows were taking selfies and putting them on. So we claimed money, and we were off a couple of hundred thousand, finally got £4.5 million. And I think that it's right that good sums are paid to the smaller clubs to compensate them for the loss of their good players. But it looks as if the Burnley deal has been a fair one. I mean, £6 to £7 million. A lot of money in my day, but I suppose they're paying £50 odd million for players, and Charlie might still be a bargain. He's a lovely fella, good player, hope he does well.
And you bring it nicely around to transfer fees there. Obviously we're seeing the market this summer be quite expensive. Manchester City have already spent over £220 million in total already. That's breaks Real Madrid's summer record from a few years ago. Also linked with spending £140 million on Monaco's Kylian Mbappe as well. Everton has spent over £100 million. Chelsea brought their transfer record. What do you make of all these fees that we're seeing teams paying now?
Well, in the old days, you used to win trophies. Now you just buy them. The problem is, of course, it started with the foreigners. I mean, Manchester City, owned by Qatar, the Qatari government, and they also own Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, money doesn't mean anything to them. Just pump a few more barrels of oil, and there's billions of barrels of oil in the sand, so why worry? And you've had the other foreigners doing it as well. Some with more success than others. But, of course, what's enabling clubs like Burnley to do it is that now you've got these tremendous new TV contracts. I have to laugh and look back. And I smashed, Ron Nose and I smashed the TV cartel where the BBC and ITV used to pay, wait for it, £3.5 million a year for the old Football League TV rights, and Thames TV used to sell the overseas rights for £300,000. Now they're talking billions, and of course a game, because when the Premiership was founded, we put in the lady in the rules that stopped the big clubs nicking all the money, which they used to do, means the small clubs get half the, or half of the domestic TV is shared equally between the 20 clubs, and all the overseas TV, a whole lot is shared between the 20 clubs equally. Of course, you now have the big clubs trying to say they should be paid on appearance. The answer is no, because the money should be shared equally. So you've got competition. That's what makes it so exciting. The fact that a club like Leicester can go and walk away with the Premiership and do well in the Champions League. And it's not just four or five clubs, the same four or five clubs every year dominating the top. So I think it's a good thing from that point of view. But that, again, is resulting in these silly transfer fees. But the government always looking for ways of raising money. Why don't they put a 25% turnover tax on TV transfers, on player transfers, and also the same on players' agents, many of whom are avoiding paying tax. They have the money paid abroad, even though they've earned it in England. So that would be a useful summing. Might help to pay for the National Health Service. After the money birds will stay in England, could go to Europe, Africa, and South America.
From your time in football, what are the memories do you have of the rise in transfer fees, and in particular any kind of acceleration when you realised things were rising quickly?
Well, to go back to the beginning, Middlesbrough created a world record transfer fee. They bought Alf Common for £1,000. And in fact, when you look in the history of football records, that's where it's such and such a year. I think it was 1908, but I'm not sure. Middlesbrough paid £1,000, a world record for a player, Alf Common. £1,000 wouldn't pay the lunch. Oh, which you agree with the agent, the salary of his client. It's quite funny. But it just goes on and on, because you need a player who you think can improve the team. But I've got my doubts about some of these players today, because they get so much money. It doesn't make sense. And I've been reading an article this week where some genuine agent was lamenting today's current crop of players, teenagers. All they want to talk about is fast cars, birds, and nice big houses and luxury holidays overseas. Don't talk much about actually playing football, training, and learning the game. It's very hard to inspire team spirit, because of course you get players who get big headed and think they're better than they are, or they don't think they play hard enough. You have to look at some of the players who have complained last season, didn't make enough appearances as they thought they should. When they did, they didn't do very much. But it's a problem that we've got, and it just depends how the authorities and the individual clubs tackle it. It's interesting that Spurs, who did very well last year in the Champions League this year, spent hardly anything. Daniel Levy said no. He's going to bring our kids up through the academy and give them the chance. It'll be interesting. See how it goes.
And elsewhere this week in the news, Donald Trump, the President of the United States, announced he's working on what he describes as a very big and exciting trade deal with Britain post-Brexit. What are your thoughts on that news this week?
Well, the whole thing is that generally Brexit is trundling along, and the Europeans, well, a few of them, huffing and puffing and threatening and this and the other. At the end of the day, there's nothing they can do about it. Just intimidation and bullying and threatening. What do you call their bluff? And now I come in this situation where they're saying that you can't import chickens that have been washed in a certain type of water.
Chanel number 5.
And another one is you can't bring certain kinds of food in, but I don't think these are for safety or health measures. I think these are protectionist measures to make sure that the European farm industry is protected, particularly the French farm industry. So you make up these silly little rules, which mean they don't conform to EU regulations, therefore can't be admitted. It's a clever way of stopping it coming in without putting a tariff on, which could result in, revenge tariffs. After we look at America, they seem a pretty healthy country, seem to live long, do all right. So what's wrong with washing your chickens? And it's up to the individual authorities in the individual countries to make sure the farmers do maintain proper hygiene standards. It's a problem solved. But the moment we get a deal, good deal, like the one that's being suggested by America, but then you've got Boris Johnson this week, he's in Australia and New Zealand, negotiating new contracts there, and they're talking to India. Of course, they're turning around saying, oh, you can't do any negotiations until you've completed the negotiations with the EU. Well, that's rubbish. You can do all your negotiations and be ready to sign the contracts when the EU is resolved. Because the EU are trying to say, well, no, the pre-bonus and all the rest of them. So I say, no, you can't talk to anybody until we resolve that. Yes, we can. We're a free, independent country. We can talk to anybody. Because the great thing about it is it means that our industries and the other countries' industries can start planning 2019. So the moment the Brexit deal is agreed, then bang, off we go. And I think the Europeans would be a bit too careful, mustn't be too greedy and dragging their feet. At the end of the day, you can just sign a form and say, no, we're out, get on with it. And one of the silly things that they're doing at the moment is trying to claim better deals for EU nationals living in Britain than British UK nationals living in Europe, which is silly. You've got to treat them all the same. And you've got the unelected people trying to pomp and pose about this and that and the other. But about the huge payment we'll have to make to them. Well, what happens if we don't make the huge payment? What happens if we don't make any payment? What about all the assets in Europe of which we own a part? Are they going to pay us for those? I think they're going to have to. At the end of the day, we pay $10 billion a year more into Europe than we get out. So they have to be careful not to be too bloody silly, because otherwise they'll lose that. There'll be nothing to replace it. And Romanian gypsies who are camped up in North End of Hyde Park in London, won't be able to draw their benefits and send them back to Romania. They'll have to go back to Romania. And we can clean up Hyde Park and let the kids play there again, as they used to. We're huffing and puffing and puffing and huffing. What we're going to do is keep quiet and get on with it. And the BBC should for once look in the mirror. Interesting, I was in the Daily Mail yesterday. How many lies the BBC are putting out. Deliberately. If a good piece is, oh, despite Brexit, why not because of Brexit? So all the people are going to leave. Well, Google have just increased the size of their staff plans in London. Plenty's happening. Plenty's happening. Share market is looking good. Unemployment's down. And all these bother about the migrant workers not picking strawberries. Well, got 1.4 million people on benefit on the dole. Taking benefits, well, unless they take, unless they do the work, maybe they lose their benefits. Maybe to the part of England they've never seen before. They're always scaremongers, always doommongers, and from people who've never done a day's work in their life in the real world. I remember reading as a young man, those that can do, those that can't, talk about it. Onwards and upwards. Don't know a lot of Mrs. Sturgeon these days, do we? Perhaps she's busy bringing her health service and her school standards up to English standards. Well, that's it, Sam, because I think the builders downstairs are about to start bashing and banging.
Fair enough. Thank you very much, KB, and we'll look forward to speaking to you again next week.